Welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Pastor Kevin Robertson. It is October 4th, 2017. Now, today I have the privilege of interviewing Matt. Now, I enjoy Matt, and I enjoy our friendship. And so, Matt, how did you find the church?
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you doing?
let's see. I found the church going on a bike ride, believe it or not. My wife and I were...
I didn't know you rode bikes.
I do. Okay. I do. Just a leisurely ride. My wife and I were living in the marina and went out one afternoon and just kind of got lost. And believe it or not, your sign, these signs do work about Saturday evening services, caught my attention.
Did you come to the church right away?
I think within a week, yeah. Okay. I told my wife about it. My wife and I have been looking for a place that had a Saturday night service.
Okay.
Because we can't make it on Sundays, so we were looking, and that sign was God's sign, I guess.
Okay. So do you remember your first Sunday?
Yes.
Okay. What was your first impression? Because we weren't a big... The Saturday night service wasn't really large.
Right.
Did you go, this church is whacked?
No, we don't. I mean, that came later. first impression was very positive.
Okay.
The size didn't bother us at all. Right. I grew up in a very small church, and Mary did too. But it was the music right away, a very different style of music than we have in our other church.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really spoke to us.
Right.
And then, honestly, just kind of your authentic approach, and I think even I remember the readers, the scripture readers, and others, just kind of a laid back but authentic, real spirituality. All of that stuck out to us right away, so we knew we wanted to come back.
Okay, and then we had some kind of a newcomers luncheon, and I remember looking at you guys going, "I like the scuffle." Because you guys look normal.
We looked up.
Yeah, I as a pastor, you just go, okay, man, can I just get some normal people here? And my first impression was you guys were very successful, very business-oriented, and I was thinking, okay, I could use them from this ministry and this ministry and this ministry. And then when you came to the luncheon, or I think we had,
dessert, I think.
Saturday night for new people.
Yeah.
You were silent. And the thing is, I remember someone asking, what do you do for a living? And you said it, and all my dreams, everything went down the tubes. And I was going, doggone it.
Yeah.
So what do you do for a living?
I am a minister.
Okay.
Like you. Yes. I'm a Presbyterian minister, and my wife's a teacher, so we're not in the business world at all. We're hardly successful.
We're doing what you're doing, which is ironic because my wife's a school teacher.
Sure.
And we're both pastors, so we've built a good friendship. And so as a pastor, you know, what church are you a pastor at?
I'm at Westwood Presbyterian Church.
Okay. Yep. Which is a beautiful church building. Jennifer loves the Christmas Eve service.
Yeah.
In fact, she said, if we're here for Christmas Eve, we're going to that
coming
service.
Back? Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
She really liked it. It's like midnight.
Yes, we do. Yeah, like 10 or 11.
Yeah, you have like 4 or 5 services.
Right.
And so, what made you decide, hey, I need a Saturday service for both of us, and yeah, then you go to Sunday service? What was...
That's a very good question. My wife and I were very newly married when we found MCF.
Okay.
I think within a year, we were newlyweds. And we kind of got married later in life, and I think each of us were looking for a way to better connect with one another.
Right.
And on Sunday morning, since I am a pastor, I'm kind of up there, above the rest of the people. And,
my total ego. Above everyone else.
That's what it's for. That's what I'm there for. And so we wanted to worship together.
Right.
I mean, already on Sundays, and you may experience this as well, thinking about what needs to be done in the service and what didn't go right and what did go right in your message. And I so often just wish I could block all that out and just worship God.
Right.
And so a Saturday night service and MCF was a way for me to do that, but also to be sitting next to my wife and for us to pray together and hear the message together. And then on the drive home, talk about the message or talk about the music. And it was just like a gift. It really was a gift from God to find MCF on that bike ride and be there with my wife.
Okay. So let's go back, because obviously there was a calling somewhere in your life to the ministry. So tell me about your upbringing. Where did you grow up?
I grew up a lot of places. My parents divorced when I was very young, and each remarried, and we moved around, so I won't go into all that. But I started attending church in West Virginia, the Panhandle, Eastern Panhandle, which is where I went to middle school and high school. And
so, now, your parents didn't go to church?
Not really.
So that's interesting, because you were junior high?
Yeah.
Okay, you were in junior high.
14.
14 years old, and there's some connection that you said, I need to connect to something?
Yeah. So my mom did, for a period, go to this very small rural church that was built during the Civil War, actually.
Okay. Wow. And, that's not
when, true. When I say small, I'm like, there were about 12, 13 people there on Sundays. And but the minister was excellent. He ministered a larger church in town later in the morning and ours early in the morning. Right. And we would go, and I was 14, and I joined when I was 15 with my mom.
The church.
The church, Presbyterian church. And she kind of stopped going after a while, and that's just by the time I got my driver's license.
Right.
And I knew something was going on in my life when I'm waking up at like 8 a.m. on a Sunday morning, you know, a high school kid, and now driving myself to church. It was kind of in a tumultuous, you know, time, teenage years, high school years, to have some foundation. Yeah.
And so so when you were going to church, obviously committing your life to follow Jesus, when did that calling take place, or did it take place? Was it just kind of morphed into something, or?
It was much later. It was after college.
Oh, really?
I never thought I would be a pastor. It still takes me by surprise that I am.
So when you went to college, what were you focusing on then?
I studied philosophy.
Okay.
And I studied political science.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I went to college in D.C., just outside of D.C., actually.
Okay.
And never took a single religion class, a Bible class, nothing in college. I still went to church, and it was very much a part of my personal life, my private life, my faith. But no, I never thought I would do this, and never took any sort of classes. I mean, I got into religion, and I got into a lot of religious philosophy.
Right.
I'm sorry, I got into philosophy and a lot of religious philosophy, but it wasn't until after college when I got a job with the U.S. Customs Service in Washington, and at their headquarters office.
So you were a custom agent.
I was not an agent. I was an investigator, believe it or not, for their internal affairs department.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you investigated people that you work with.
I investigated
agents. You were everyone's best friend.
Oh, yeah. No, it was...
dude, that's cool.
It was an office full of us. It was. It was a lot of interesting stories and just a lot of boring stories, too.
Right.
It was night work and weekend work and a lot of pushing paper, as you can imagine, with the government. And I did that for a few years, and it was kind of the point in that process, because I was entry level, where it was time to decide, do I want to make a career of this? Do I want to be a special agent, an investigator?
Yeah, I would assume that's a good retirement.
Oh, it's great. And that was, you know, it was a great salary and great benefits and so forth. But I needed to decide if I was going to kind of make a career of it and seek promotion. And if I was going to do that, I needed to probably move to the southern border and kind of make, you know, kind of pay my dues. And I was just like, what else is there? And I started thinking about what was most important to me and what did I want to do with my life? Really, honestly, was I just going to do this or something deeper, more meaningful? Not that that job or other jobs aren't, but for me, it just wasn't feeding my soul. So that's when I started praying, and I went back and found my pastor of that little church in West Virginia.
Did you really?
And
kind of going back to your roots?
Going back to my roots and reading. And
so was he still pastoring there?
No, he had moved on. So I tracked him down, Pastor Randy, and he remembered me and my mom.
Yeah.
And so good conversations, and he gave me things to read. And I didn't even know what denomination or what. I thought, I'm just going to explore and see what God has planned. And then I did the whole bargaining thing. I said, well, maybe I'll be a professor, right? Maybe I'll be a teacher. I'll go to graduate school and I'll teach religion somewhere. I can't be a pastor, you know? So I started down that road. And
why did you think he couldn't be a pastor?
It's just that my faith was too personal.
It was like your image was different. Your image of a pastor was one way, and you were another way?
Yeah, image of a pastor was to be out there, to be very vocal and sharing. Okay. And to me, my faith was something that was very personal. Okay. And I didn't know I was very shy, very introverted, right. If I could be the one that...
Because to this day you are.
I am.
Yeah.
I am. And so it's very hard to speak publicly or to share the very depths of my soul or my spiritual struggle.
Right.
So, like, can I do that for a living? I mean, how can I? So I kept, you know, bargaining. Maybe a professor, maybe a teacher, maybe this or this or this. And then I said, okay, well, I'll just apply to seminaries and just see what happens.
All right.
I've applied to three, got into all three. Okay. I'll just...
That fleece.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, God. Shoot. And then they all say, come for a weekend visit. You know, we'll host you.
Right.
I said, okay, what can that hurt? I'll just go for a weekend visit.
So you went to all three.
I went to all three. Okay. Checked all three out. One stood out, you know, which is where I ended up going. And I said, okay, well, I can't afford this.
Why did it stand out?
It felt like home.
Okay.
It just, the campus, the other students, the professors, it didn't give off that holier than thou kind of, you're not going to fit in here vibe.
Right.
It just
and
felt
so
like...
So what's the campus name? What's the...
Columbia Seminary in Atlanta, Georgia, Presbyterian Seminary. Right. But I also looked at Princeton and a place in
You were accepted Virginia. In Princeton?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. And I turned it down.
And I'm your friend.
You know someone who got into Princeton.
That turned down Princeton. It's a dumb move.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and then, you know, and then I said, okay, I'll just apply for financial aid, and if God really wants this to happen, then he's going to have to make it happen. And sure enough, I got incredible aid to seminary, and I said, I have no more bargaining chips. I have nothing else to say no to. And so I quit my job in D.C., and to the shock of my family and friends who, again, didn't see this coming.
Did they try to convince you, like, you're being stupid?
Yes. Yes. So this was...
Because if you had a high-paying job and a potential of a
career track,
and then you're going, oh, wait, I'm taking student loans and I'm going to seminary to be a pastor.
Yes.
Unless you're totally into the theology of a lot of money, you know, prosperity theology, it doesn't pay.
Right.
And you're getting in debt. So I could see, yes, your family would go, forget it.
I mean, I don't think they were negative toward it because it was, you know, a calling.
Right.
And they knew that I was a Christian and that I went to church and that was a part of my life. But this was dramatic, a dramatic shift. So, but I did it anyway.
So you graduated.
From the seminary, yeah.
From the seminary.
I graduated in 2004.
Okay, so do you remember your first church?
Oh, sure. It was in North Carolina, a small church, very similar to the one I grew up in.
Okay.
I felt like I needed to give back. I had gotten so much from my church and the pastor there. So I was a solo pastor there for almost 5 years.
Okay, now tell me this. I think, because this church has been my first church as a senior pastor. I was... an associate pastor for 16 years prior to getting this church. Did you, as a senior pastor, go, oh man, 4 years from now, this church will be huge?
Yes,
and it's going to be big, and we're going to buy all this property. It's going to be running 300, you know, because I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
So you thought that too?
Of course, I had huge dreams. I was 27, I think, when I started there. Yeah, I had huge dreams of attendance, you know, just, we won't have enough pews, right? I guess that's good. It's healthy to have that drive and motivation and want to do that.
Dreams and seeing change life. So how was your experience there?
Hard.
Was it?
Humbling hard. So much so that I thought maybe I'd misheard God. Maybe... being a pastor wasn't my calling. It was very isolating. Like I said, a small town. I was the only person at the church employed there. Single, you know, just no support system personally or professionally. And
so was there any highlight to that? How long were you there for?
Almost 5 years.
Okay, 5 years. So my wife and I do this dumb little game, highlight, lowlight.
Mm.
And usually when we're on vacation, we go, what was the highlight of your vacation? And what was the low light? Usually it's me. I'm the low light. And so what was the highlight of your ministry in those 5 years?
The First Church? The highlight?
Yeah.
I learned a lot. I learned reality. I learned
that's
how...
that's a good point. I learned reality.
I learned reality.
Okay.
How people could be, sorry, other,
right.
you know, church members, but
right.
how to work with difficult personalities. I learned about my ability to make it through.
Okay.
I mean, I think I learned a lot about myself, and so I still draw on that when things
okay.
get hard now. I realize, you know, I've been through stuff before.
Yeah, now, listening to you, I would think, well, that's the highlight and the low light.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
Yeah. So would you say the low light would be the same?
Yes.
About the reality?
So, yeah. So
and
it's two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting when you're in the ministry, there's a learning process, I think, that all of us go through that we don't realize we signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
And we just go, I know I want to change the world, but I'm being changed now too. And this change hurts like heck.
Yeah.
And so you were there 5 years, and you said, okay, so what happened after 5 years?
I needed a change. I personally...
I'm done with this.
Yeah, and so I said, you know, if I'm going to be still in the ministry, I need to be a part of a team. I need to be a part of a staff
right.
that works together, collaborates together, supports each other.
Right.
So an associate pastor position sounded very appealing.
Okay.
So I started searching and looking, and our... Presbyterian denomination has a very good kind of online search. We don't get placed from places
okay.
by bishops. We
right.
It's kind of a search process that you undergo. And on this Presbyterian website, I'll never forget, a little link at the bottom says, click here for overseas opportunities.
Okay.
Just out of curiosity, I clicked on it, and there was a perfect position, just what I was looking for, associate pastor position, but it was in Tokyo, Japan.
Tokyo.
Yeah, yeah.
And have you ever been to Japan?
No. Never been
See,
to that
this
part of
the world. This is where a fine line between trusting God and being stupid.
And being crazy.
Yeah, it really is. You're sitting in this podunk church that's been very painful for you,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden you go, okay, I want to be an associate. Let me click Tokyo in Japan. So how long did you think this through, the Tokyo and Japan thing?
To be honest with you, I didn't. I just...
That's crazy.
I just applied.
Yeah.
I said, if this is where I'm supposed to go, I'm just going to apply and let it go.
Right.
And I sent in all my paperwork and documents. I remember working all weekend, staying up all night to get them in so that they would receive them Monday morning to know I was serious.
Right.
And I heard back, and they were immediately interested, which shocked me.
Right.
Because I was coming from a podunk town in North Carolina, right? It had one stoplight, this town I was living in North Carolina. Tokyo is the largest city in the world. That was the difference.
That's funny.
Like,
that's funny.
What would they want with me? And so we talked, and eventually...
That's a big jump for you.
It was, you know, from a small, rural, predominantly white... community
correct.
In North Carolina to the largest, most diverse.
And the fast pace, the difference.
Yeah.
So do you remember you flying there? Did you fly there to interview?
I flew there to interview
okay.
for a long weekend, from a Thursday to Sunday, if you can believe it.
And
it was
how
like
long
a,
was the flight?
Well, I flew from North Carolina to New York and then New York to Tokyo. So I think total it was close to, with delays and, you know, layover, 20 hours.
Okay, 20 hours for an interview.
Yeah.
Okay, now what is this position? An associate pastor.
Associate.
So you felt good about the interview?
Yeah, I felt good. I preached, you know, all jet lagged. with people, from all over the world. It's an international, interdenominational church. It wasn't a Presbyterian church. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not just Japanese people.
No, people from over 30 different countries.
Okay,
yeah.
So is the main language English?
Main language is English.
Because you didn't know...
Didn't know a word of Japanese.
And this is a church school type facility.
Yeah, they had a preschool there.
Okay. So you had 40 hours of flight for one interview.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And you know what the kicker is?
What?
When I left, I didn't know.
Oh,
they didn't offer or not offer. They just
Did they pay your way?
Or
did
they paid my way. Okay. But I was hoping by the time I got back on that flight back to North Carolina, that I'd have some indication.
And did you want it then?
Oh, yeah, yes.
Okay. So now you have a 20-hour flight just thinking this thing.
Thinking, I don't even know why. Analyzing the whole weekend, the whole trip, my sermon, and going back to this place where I was very unhappy and saying, it can go either way. They gave me no tells.
Yeah. And would you say that's typical from that culture? Like, they're not, they don't think out loud.
They're very process-oriented. Yeah.
Because I process out loud. Yeah. A lot of people don't. So when did you find out you got the job?
About 2 weeks later, I got a...
2 weeks.
I got a phone call. Nice. Comes to find out they had another candidate the following weekend after me, and they wanted to do right by them, and I can understand that.
That makes sense. So you got it, the other guy didn't.
Correct.
So then when did you... So you resigned your church and flew to Tokyo.
Yeah. January 2009.
Any apprehensions? Anything?
Kevin, No, I felt like I had nothing to lose.
Okay.
When you're that unhappy in a place,
right?
You're ready to let it all go, and you don't. I felt like I wasn't entitled to kind of be scared or apprehensive. Right. I was praying for God to give me a new chance and to show me something new, and God did. So I just wasn't gonna be afraid.
Okay, so you went and you started working as associate pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Now, you were single, right?
Yes.
Okay, you were single then. Did the loneliness kick in when you're in Tokyo and you're going...
It did. And they prepared me for that.
Okay.
They did this a lot with their pastors. You know, they bring in pastors every few years.
Okay.
It was hard. In this huge city where you don't know the language, you don't know anyone.
Right.
So that first 6, 8, 10 months was very hard.
Now, if you're listening to the podcast, one thing I love about Matt, you would think as pastors we would love Christmas. Matt is the biggest Ebenezer Scrooge on the planet. Okay, when it comes to I don't like Christmas.
No, you're going to bring this up.
Okay, and so did that develop in Tokyo where you just go, I hate Christmas, Christmas sucks?
That's really a strong word.
Okay, I don't hate Christmas. Christmas is overrated.
It was even harder. As you mentioned, I'm alone in this foreign city, far away from all my family and friends back in the States. Christmas for pastors, as you know, it's the busiest time of year, and you spend all of December kind of having events and planning worship so that other people, rightly so, can enjoy or draw closer to God. But in the meantime, you're spending so much time
helping other people.
Work, that you're not really appreciating the holiday. And then here I am with a lot of the expats there in Tokyo having a Christmas break if they're teachers or if they're professionals to fly home for the holidays.
Right.
So a lot of people are gone.
Right.
Friends that I did make were gone for the holidays. Right. And I wake up Christmas morning.
By yourself.
By myself. Yeah.
And
in a country that doesn't celebrate Christmas.
Oh, they don't.
No, they don't. They don't know really what it is.
Okay.
And they're less than 1% Christian.
So you're sitting. So you wake up.
It's a normal work day.
So you wake up Christmas morning.
Yeah.
And you go, this sucks. It does suck.
It was lonely.
So did you? I don't know if you've done this. Did you start praying for someone?
Like a partner, spouse?
Yeah. Or did you just go, okay, I'm.
No, not specifically. I prayed. Prayed for companionship.
Okay, companionship.
Friendship.
So somehow you met your wife.
Yes.
In Tokyo.
She attended the church. She wasn't a member, but she attended the church. Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you remember when you first saw her?
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Were you immediately attracted to her?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Because
as a pastor, because I met Jennifer in this church, and I remember seeing her go, man, she's a doll.
Yeah.
But then I had to keep professional, you know. So I remember when I greeted Jennifer at the front door, and I could not get a conversation out of her, you know. And I remember she brought her friend. They were going to the beach, and her friend talked to me more than Jennifer. Jennifer just stood there and was quiet.
Mm-hmm.
So do you remember the same thing with you? Did that happen?
My wife is never quiet.
Was she attracted to you? Do you know?
Yeah, I remember the day I first saw her and met her and talked to her after church. And I jokingly say it was the best day of her life. Yeah. but it was also the best day of my life. Yeah, I think there was...
Now, she's Anglo, for people that are listening, so...
Yeah, she's not... She's Canadian, actually.
She's Canadian.
Yeah.
So, how did she end up there?
She was a teacher at an international school, all-girls Catholic middle school. And she had been there for a couple years before I arrived. So, it was already very much home for her. And she had developed a set of friends and a community, some in the church and some outside the church. So... It began as a friendship because, again, being lonely and new, her and the other kind of young adults in the church said, well, let's show them Tokyo. Let's take them out to our favorite restaurants. Yeah. Let's, show them that this is a fun place and he's far from home, so let's help him out. And so just in that context, in those group of friends, getting to talk to Mary and getting to know her.
Okay. And so do you remember, and I sound like a little junior higher here, but do you remember when all of a sudden you first held her hand or when this one moved from friendship to we're dating?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay. So then you start dating, which you're in Tokyo, and I think this will be kind of cool. I'm living in Tokyo. Then I met the love of my life. And so how long did you guys start dating until you got engaged?
Oh, that's a long story.
Is it really?
That would be a long podcast.
4 months, 5 months.
Well, let me see. So we started probably kind of dating more than friendship in the fall. And I think by the following summer, I had proposed. Yeah.
All right. Now, where did you get married at?
We got married twice.
Twice? So you got married the first time, then you go...
That wasn't like good it. Enough. Let's
it's
do
not
it
good
again.
Enough. Yeah. We're getting a divorce, and let's get. I didn't know you got married twice. Is that okay with the Presbyterian Church?
Well, they don't know, so don't tell them.
They don't know.
Yeah, okay. None of you tell them.
The first wedding?
In Japan, in Tokyo.
Oh, that's
at
cool.
At the municipal building. Now, the reason why we needed to do this is because... We were moving to Los Angeles.
Okay.
We were engaged. We had a wedding arranged here in America with all our friends. Traditional inter-Presbyterian church. But Mary's Canadian, as I mentioned.
Okay.
I'm American. And we knew someone in the American embassy who said, you're going to have a real difficult time, a lot of paperwork, or she will, getting to the States. She won't be able to get employment or leave the country during the process. One way around it is to have a formal wedding certificate here in Japan.
Okay.
Take that to your U.S. embassy and get her on the green card process early. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we have a Japanese wedding anniversary. We have an American wedding.
And then how far between are those two? Which anniversary do you celebrate?
We celebrate, November 1st is our wedding anniversary here in the States.
Okay, November 1st.
Yeah, and...
That's the one you celebrate.
Yes.
Okay. That's what people know. People don't know the other one.
Right, the first one, I know it's September.
It's September somewhere.
The exact date.
Why were you moving to the United States?
I'd been in Tokyo for, again, almost 5 years, and...
So 5 years seems to be your thing,
doesn't
it? Okay.
And there I was on a contract. It was year-to-year contract.
Right.
And the contract was coming up, and just kind of doing my due diligence, I was looking at what was available back here in the States, and this church in L.A. popped up. But it was about the same time that Mary and I were getting serious, and so... Long story short, I said, if I'm going to the States, I'm only going if Mary comes with me,
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so through the whole interview process with this church here, Mary and I were talking and praying and thinking about our future versus staying in Tokyo together.
Okay.
And it just...
Because that's hard because she had no plans on living in the United States, did she?
No.
So you're in this dilemma, if she can't go in the United States, then we're going to stay here in Tokyo,
yeah,
right?
So we're both happy there in Tokyo, and I think we both would have stayed.
Yeah.
And, but I wasn't going to come here, like I said, unless she felt comfortable and felt like it was the
right
move to make. I mean, if you married and start a family, doing that in a place like Tokyo, far away from all your relatives and... and just the pace of life there versus kind of settling down more in North America.
Right.
Yeah.
So you started the Presbyterian Church as an associate pastor.
Here.
Yeah, here.
Yeah.
So that's a job that you received. It's a Presbyterian job.
Yes.
So I want to talk about this, because this is my favorite part of the story. if you guys don't know Mary, Mary is not a traditional pastor's wife, and which I love. She just cracks me up because it's just like, don't fit me in a mold. And as pastors, because I sometimes we just say, come on, honey, just go with the flow here. There's a protocol. It's totally unspoken. So the funniest story that I like, and I want you to share this story, was Christmas Eve. Yes. I think it was your first Christmas Eve, right?
It was our first Christmas Eve here in Los Angeles. Mary, so a little backstory. Mary stayed in Tokyo after I had moved here. We got married on November 1st, and she actually flew back to Tokyo because she's a teacher.
Right.
So it was important for her to finish her semester with her students and then to fly here to the States. So I think she arrived just a couple days before Christmas Eve.
Okay.
The church hadn't really met her yet, gotten to know her. She everyone just knew that she was coming and she would be here for
they
Christmas.
They were excited about it.
They were very excited, yes.
Meeting our new associate's wife.
Exactly. And the senior pastor of the church, Lynn, she was very excited as well and asked Mary to be a scripture reader on Christmas Eve. And we have multiple services.
Right, which my wife and I love.
Yes, and the first service is a family-friendly service, you know, where there's tons of kids and there's no real sermon. It's more of a story.
Right.
And so Mary was scheduled to be the scripture reader for that service.
Yeah, and you don't think, hey, I'm reading scripture. That's it. I mean, you don't think,
how could this go wrong? My new wife's just going to read scripture.
It's text. You read.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm already at the church for the afternoon, and Mary arrives.
Right.
At the early part of the service, and I'm already seated up front. And when it's time for her to read scripture, she comes walking down the center aisle in the shortest little cocktail dress that I've ever seen.
Let's slow it down. You're sitting on the platform, and you're obviously, we have a script in front of us, we know who's going to read, so you know, Mary's up next, right?
Yes.
And so you see Mary walking,
and
the first thing comes in your head.
Oh my God, they're going to fire me.
They're going to fire me.
Mary, she's a beautiful lady, and she had, like I said, just arrived from Tokyo, and all of our shipment hadn't arrived yet, so all she had was she could fit in a couple suitcases, and I think she was just used to living kind of in a Tokyo lifestyle, and she had the only dress she had was a very kind of short cut dress that, other than slacks or jeans, she didn't have anything formal for Christmas Eve. And so at this Christmas Eve children's family service, she's wearing this short dress, I'll never forget it, reading the Bible lesson for them.
Did you add to this?
I was bright red.
I mean, sometimes when our wives go, you look nice, but not for church.
Yeah, not for church.
And we're going out to dinner. Yes. Do you have anything that goes to the ankle?
Yes, exactly. Cover up. Wear a bathrobe.
Wear a bathrobe. Now, the thing is, I don't think Mary thought anything wrong.
I don't think she thought, no.
Yeah.
Her only comment to me was, it was a little bit shorter than I remember it.
And you went, little?
Yeah, a little bit, yes.
That's funny. So anyway, the thing is, on your marriage, it's, to me, being an outsider looking in, both of you challenge each other.
Hmm.
Both of you just, it's almost like iron sharpens iron without choosing to. Because it's like my wife, I'll say something, so just challenge it.
Yeah.
And I go, why are you challenging it? Why are we arguing about this? But it's almost like my wife loves to challenge. She loves to argue about the things. And sometimes I'm not in the mood to argue, but she likes to argue about it. And I see that the same thing, that Mary will push and you will push back. And
It's true. I think, the downside of it is that sometimes creates a friction that maybe isn't necessary. But the positive is that it keeps us honest. We're engaging with each other. We're maybe helping each other see our blind spots. Like you said, sharpen each other. We have strong personalities, each one of us, strong wills, maybe control issues or ego issues.
Well, if you're a pastor, you have control issues.
Yeah, exactly. And it's been a learning, marriage has been a learning process, just like anything in life.
Because Matt and I occasionally go out together for lunch, and we talk about our wives as they are hoarders. And they're typical teachers. That basically they keep everything because it'll be for a future project.
Yes.
And I'm going, future? You've had this for 7 years, you know? And so Matt was telling me that Mary has these books that stack up that basically if they fall, they would kill someone. That's how high they are.
You're trying to get me in trouble with this.
Well, my wife does the same thing, but she doesn't listen to the podcast. So, but anyway, you had another love of your life just last year. Your little baby.
Oh, Joshua.
You're looking at me like I don't know what I'm talking about.
No.
Tell me about Joshua.
Oh, he is. He's the best thing that's happened to me.
He's a beautiful kid.
He's wonderful. He's happy. He's the happiest little baby. And
despite his parents.
Despite his parents. He's healthy. He's happy. Yeah. He brings us joy.
And he's such a good-looking kid.
He looks exactly like his father.
I wish I could keep a straight face when you said that. Spin image of his dad.
No,
because I remember that you sent a text to me of his first steps.
Yeah.
And
just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and you were so stinking excited about it. Oh my! My son can walk.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's I just turned 40 this year, so that kind of brings with it some moments of reflecting and thinking on life, and then my son just turned one.
Good grief!
So things are happening in life, and
so you'll be 60 years old when he graduates from college,
something like that. Yeah. Who knows when I'll actually pay it off, but how old I'll be.
So anyway, let's wind it up.
Okay.
Wind it up. So we talked about your calling in the ministry. You met your wife in Tokyo, dealt with loneliness. Ministry was one of the things that you learned in ministry was reality, which was good and positive. So let's say somebody's going, oh man, I really want to go into ministry. I'm like, Matt, I'm not sure I have a love for the Lord. How would you encourage somebody, or would you encourage them? Or how would they know, yes, I'm going to quit a government job that I could be moving way back in Texas somewhere in the South or whatever to have enough guts to move to Tokyo? And you look at this, you met your lovely wife, you have a beautiful son, you have a good ministry at the Presbyterian Church right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what advice would you give somebody that was stuck in a low podunk low church or stuck doing something that they're unfulfilled and they're really looking for purpose?
You know, talking through this with you just now, maybe in retrospect, it looks like things fall into place.
Right.
But at the time, it doesn't feel that way. And there's a lot of uncertainty involved. I think that's one bit of advice, is uncertainty is part of it.
Yeah.
You're not going to always have just beams of light from heaven, like Paul, and just kind of know 100%. It's going to be two steps forward and one step back and uncertainty. And I think that's, for me, that's advice that I try to give, is to be patient. To know that things aren't always going to fall into place. One of my favorite quotes from a writer is Paula D'Arcy, who says that God comes to us disguised as our life.
Mm.
And I can see that now. And I try, and keep that in mind a lot, is that God is in this today, this week, this situation, whether it was my loneliness or just the joy of meeting Mary, is that God is there. So just paying attention to what's going on in your life, to what God is doing in your life now, and not getting discouraged when you're not hearing things from God, but just continuing to listen to what God is doing in your life.
Yeah. And so if somebody wants to visit your church, you guys got a website?
Yeah, Westwood Press, PRES.org.
Okay, and when are your service and address?
We are on Wilshire Boulevard, 10822 Wilshire, very close to UCLA. And we have two services on Sunday morning at 8:50 in the morning and 11:10.
Okay. And so, and then if you're interested in coming to our church, we have a 10 o'clock service. And this Saturday, Matt's coming back. He hasn't been to Saturday night service in 9 months. Because we haven't had it.
That's right. It's your fault. Not mine. You make it sound like I haven't been. Yeah. It's Kevin's fault.
He's a backslidden pastor. Hasn't been in church in 9 months. He came once. He came on the Sunday morning once.
That's right.
Well, we... so if you want to see Matt and Mary and their little beautiful son.
We'd love to see you Saturday.
Join us Saturday at 6 p.m. this Saturday. I think it's October 7th. So God bless you. Have a great day. And remember, every day is a gift from God. Use it wisely. I'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
See, you did pretty good. You feel good about it?
Thank you. That was fun.